KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has a new plan to strengthen its collaboration with tribes and help them build more sustainable food systems. The Mountain West News Bureau's Caleb Radel has more.
Nationwide, there are 574 federally recognized tribes. Nearly half of them are in the West, where tribes manage or farm more than 55 million acres of land. The USDA's new strategy aims to help tribes better protect and preserve the natural resources and farmland they rely on. That includes dedicating more staff and funding to conservation across tribal lands and incorporating indigenous knowledge into that work. Roy Lean comes at night as a conservationist with the agency and a member of the Blackfeet Nation in Montana.
This gives us an opportunity to now build this tribe by tribe, and so that each tribal nation that has their own concerns can adopt and adapt those concerns to meet their needs.
She says overall the new strategy supports tribes' cultural and farming traditions and will make sure their priorities and knowledge shape future federal policies. I'm Caleb Radel.
A new study profiles a recently discovered species of amphibian that survived harsh Wyoming weather by burrowing into the ground. It lived near the Wind River Reservation millions of years ago. Wyoming Public Radio's Chris Clements has more.
University of Wisconsin researcher Dave Lovelace came across the fossils, still preserved in their burrows, on BLM land near Du Bois. He returned there over the years, eventually partnering with the Eastern Shoshone tribe to bring local middle school students and elders to the site. The idea was to have researchers talk about the fossils and for elders of the Northern Arapaho and Eastern Shoshone tribes to discuss their knowledge of the creatures. Here's Lovelace.
Looking at weaving those two narratives together, we don't have that built-in knowledge and history.
Reba Turan is Eastern Shoshone and a co-author of the paper. She named the species Ninnambihan Dakutaka, two Shoshone words.
The Ninnambi are still here with us. They were very powerful beings. They were only like 3 feet tall, and they live up in our mountains even today.
Lovelace says the early amphibians' burrowing habit gives researchers hope about a way for modern amphibians to survive climate change. I'm Chris Clements in Laramie.
The Aleutic Museum in Alaska has received a grant to revamp its cultural library. As KMXT's Brian Benoit reports, it will be part of the museum's grand reopening in May.
The Aleutic Museum has been closed for over a year for an expansion project to nearly double its size. Museum officials plan to display more items from its collections as well as feature more art from contemporary culture bearers. But now with this grant from the Institute of Museum and Library Sciences, the museum will make it easier than ever to access its library, too.
In the past, we had a library. I don't think anyone knew that.
That's Amanda Lancaster, the museum's curator of collections. Since 2018, the library has served as the official tribal library of Koniag, Kodiaks and Regional Native Corporation.
It was in the basement. It was very inaccessible. You had to make an appointment. You had to have a staff member with you just because it was in the basement and, you know, sort of a more of a staff space.
The library features thousands of printed materials, hundreds of audiovisual items, and well over 10,000 photos as part of the collection for people to research Aleutic culture. The new funding will help the museum pay for renovations for a more friendly library space. Lancaster says they're aiming to have matching shelving units, furniture for a seating area, and computers for research. Patrons won't need appointments or staff supervision just to be in there. They'll just need to check in at the front desk and use the library at their leisure. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Benoit.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
educators. Ready to transform Indigenous education? The NISN School Design Fellowship is accepting community letters of interest through January 31st at nacainspiredschoolsnetwork.org, who support this show. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs Strauss Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for over 40 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
AGDC has reached an exclusive framework agreement with a qualified energy company to privately lead and fund the development of the Alaska LNG project.
The Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation says it's close to an agreement to finally build a natural gas pipeline. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News and Alaska News Nightly for Monday, January 6th. Good evening, I'm Wesley Early. Also tonight, President Biden's ban on offshore drilling in some areas draws criticism from Alaska's congressional delegation.
I think the President Biden's legacy is going to be the worst president in American history in terms of American energy.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If domestic violence has touched your life, know that you are not alone. You have the power to break free and build a future filled with love and respect. There's hope and help waiting for you. For free and confidential support, visit notaloneak.org to speak to someone who's trained to help. Every Alaskan deserves to feel safe. This message sponsored by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
President Joe Biden announced today that he's banning offshore oil and gas drilling in large swaths of federal waters, including one section off Alaska in the northern Bering Sea. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports.
Biden called the Northern Bering Sea a vital ecosystem that supports traditional ways of life. Alaska Native organizations representing more than 70 tribes in western Alaska and the Bering Straits area issued a joint statement celebrating the announcement. Anna Rose MacArthur is a marine advocate at Kuwerik, a tribal nonprofit based in Nome. She says tribes have been requesting this for 40 years.
So this is a huge accomplishment that's shared across generations, really, of working towards this moment. So it's really exciting.
Tribal leaders say protecting the area from drilling safeguards the fish, birds, and marine mammals they depend on for food and to sustain their culture. The Alaska region subject to the ban has no oil and gas development underway, and the industry is not clamoring to get into it. The ban adds to an offshore withdrawal then-President Obama made when he created the Northern Bering Sea Climate Resilience Area in 2016. Both Obama and Biden used a portion of a 1953 law to withdraw the areas. Incoming President Donald Trump told talk show host Hugh Hewitt, he'll reverse the ban.
It's ridiculous. I'll unban it immediately. I will unban it. I have the right to unban it immediately. What's he doing? Why is he doing it?
But it's not clear Trump can undo this without an act of Congress because the law doesn't have a provision for reversing a presidential withdrawal. In 2019, a U.S. District Court judge in Anchorage struck down Trump's attempt to reverse Obama's Bering Sea withdrawal. On Sunday, as news of the offshore ban leaked, Alaska's new congressman denounced Biden's action and the president personally. Representative Nick Begich wrote a social media post noting the importance of Cook Inlet gas to Alaskans. Biden's closure doesn't extend to Cook Inlet, a Begich spokeswoman said he knows that. A statement from his office Monday said he believes the federal government's opposition to oil and gas drilling diminishes the industry's interest in offshore leases, and he doesn't think a president should lock up resources by fiat. Senator Dan Sullivan also blasted Biden on Fox News.
I think the President Biden's legacy is going to be the worst president in American history in terms of American energy.
Biden, for all his emphasis on clean energy and protecting federal land, presided over a record boom in oil production. Senator Lisa Murkowski's reaction was more nuanced. In 2018, she and Sullivan asked then-President Trump's Interior Department to remove the entire Bering Sea region from upcoming lease sales. Now, she acknowledges regional opposition to offshore drilling in the Bering Sea, but says Biden's ban is too sweeping and shouldn't have come so close to the end of his term. The ban leaves much of the Gulf of Mexico available for leases. That area is the source of 97% of the nation's offshore production. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The state corporation spearheading an effort to build a $44 billion natural gas pipeline between the North Slope and Nikiski says it's finalizing an agreement with a private company to lead the project. Alaska Gasline Development Corporation President Frank Richards shared the development during an energy press conference with Governor Mike Dunleavy today in Anchorage.
Today, after 10 years of planning, engineering, and permitting, I'm announcing that AGDC has reached an exclusive framework agreement with a qualified energy company to privately lead and fund the development of the Alaska LNG project.
Richard says AGDC won't release the name of the company until a final agreement is reached, but he says the company has, quote, extensive U.S. and international natural gas and LNG experience.
The terms of the framework agreement have been negotiated. The next step is for both parties to create legally binding development agreements that will move the project forward.
It's been roughly a month since Alaska's state-run development agency okayed a $50 million line of credit to update the project's engineering and design work. Richard said Monday that move was, quote, critical to the framework agreement, which they hope to finish soon.
The sooner that this project gets underway, the sooner Alaskans benefit from our North Slope natural gas for the long-term benefits.
Construction of the 800-mile pipeline has been floated for decades, but high costs and questionable demand have stymied progress. It got new life after Russia's invasion of Ukraine sent some countries in Europe looking to diversify their energy sources. And Dunleavy has celebrated what he anticipates will be a more accommodating federal government once President-elect Donald Trump is sworn in later this month. Tim Fitzpatrick, the corporation's spokesperson, said Monday the agreement will cover the full project cost, but that the state will have the option to chip in up to 25% of costs once a final investment decision is made. He says it would be up to Dunleavy and state lawmakers to decide whether the state wants equity in the final project. Dunleavy said today he thinks there's a, quote, real opportunity for the project.
I've questioned it for years, to be perfectly honest with you. And I, as I mentioned earlier, I've been hesitant to talk about it until there's some real concrete, steps going forward. But I think we're entering a phase of reality for this pipeline.
Richard says he expects to announce a final agreement within the next few months. Then, he says, work could start on front-end engineering and design, the last step before any construction could start. Anchorage is expected to add 2,300 jobs this year, according to a new report by the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Employment in the city has grown about 2% annually since 2020, but it's expected to slow to 1.5% this year. Samuel Tappan is the author of the report. Despite an overall increase in the amount of jobs, he says there's a few long-term trends hindering growth.
The big one is negative net migration. We've now experienced negative net migration for 10 years, which is unprecedented.
He says the last year Anchorage experienced in-migration was during the 2008 recession, which was the longest economic downturn since World War II. The downturn caused labor disruptions in the lower 48, though Alaska's economy was less affected. The healthcare and educational health services sectors are projected to lead Anchorage's job growth, each adding 800 jobs in 2025. Construction is also expected to see strong growth, adding 600 jobs. Construction led job growth in Anchorage last year by about 9%, the report says, and statewide, the sector paid 16% more in total wages from 2022 to 2023. Tappan says the growth in the construction industry was expected, in part because of the Federal Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, which has sent more than $5 billion to Alaska for various projects. A surge in local construction projects has created a tight labor market for the industry, and Tappan says Anchorage imports about 14% of its construction workers.
We see this fluctuate a little bit as local labor conditions change, but this is something that Alaska has always relied on more than other states.
The report says Anchorage is benefiting from major North Slope oil projects like Willow and Pica because the city is a hub for services like engineering, healthcare, and business. The over $5 billion in federal infrastructure funds include spending plans for expanding broadband access in rural areas and various other infrastructure needs. And while some of those projects are outside city limits, Tappan says they'll still benefit the local economy.
Anchorage, which really has the largest and most specialized economy in the state, has been a hub for goods and services to the rest of the state for decades. These contractors are supplying their materials from Anchorage firms, and when the workers from all these firms, those dollars continue to cycle within the Anchorage economy.
Anchorage's working age population is down by 19,000 people since its peak in 2013, according to the report. Statewide, economists anticipate the working age population will continue to decline through 2030. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Fairbanks skier Kendall Kramer wins a national title at Kincaid Park in Anchorage.
Once I realized going into the last lap that I could have my first national championship and not settle for second, even though that would have been good, then I just tried for it.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
How does Alaska's land fund community services for Alaskans with behavioral health conditions and developmental disabilities? Through the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. The Trust Land Office manages 1 million acres of lands to maximize revenue generation, with earnings supporting millions of dollars in trust grant making each year to help improve mental health outcomes for beneficiaries statewide. More at alaskamentalhealthtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
A teenage boy from Aniak has died after going through the ice on a snow machine upriver from Kauskag on Saturday evening, according to state troopers. The boy, 15-year-old Cole Galila, was riding with another boy on a snow machine on the Kuskokwim River ice around 8 miles above Kauskag on Saturday evening. Troopers say they received a report just after 6 p.m. that the snow machine had driven into an open hole, putting both boys in the water. Galila disappeared under the ice. The other boy, who has not been publicly identified, was able to get out of the water and was taken to the Kauskag Clinic by a truck traveling on the river. According to troopers, the boy was cold but uninjured. Search and rescue volunteers from Aniak and Kauskag recovered Galila's body a couple hours later. Troopers say Galila's next of kin have been notified and that his body will be sent to the state medical examiner after being transported to Aniak. Meanwhile, a 26-year-old Circle resident was charged with murder following the death of his cabin mate on Thursday. Alaska State Troopers and investigators from the State Bureau of Investigation responded to the incident, where 48-year-old James Galvin was declared dead at the scene. He was found on the front porch of the cabin where he lived in Circle, a small community about 150 miles northeast of Fairbanks. Investigators allege that 26-year-old Jarek Boyle shot Galvin at close range from inside the cabin and through the front door. Boyle's family members told investigators that earlier in the day, the victim had argued with his two roommates and made unspecified threats. According to charging documents, Boyle's father advised him to lock Galvin out of the shared cabin despite outside temperatures of around negative 50 degrees Fahrenheit. Troopers charged Boyle with first-degree murder and brought him to Fairbanks Correctional Center. He was arraigned at the Fairbanks Courthouse on Friday, and his bail was set at $500,000. His next hearing is scheduled for January 13th at 3:15 p.m. Galvin's body has been transported to the State Medical Examiner's Office in Anchorage for autopsy. His next of kin have been notified, and the investigation is ongoing. More than 20,000 Alaskans get their health insurance through the federal marketplace, and rates for health insurance are set to go up by about 17% this year after 2 years of similar increases. Reporter Nat Herz of the Northern Journal has written about the increases for the past 2 years and argues there's little widespread discussion about it. And Herz notes he's not just covering the issue as a journalist, but as someone who's feeling the strain of the rising costs himself.
I'm a small business owner, right? I publish my own newsletter and news website, and so I have to come up with my own insurance, which means that I get it from the federal marketplace. And last year, when I signed up for my insurance, it seemed like it was going up. I checked with the state and they gave me sort of this analysis of the rates on the federal individual marketplace. And indeed, they'd gone up a lot. And when I went back to sign up again this year, I was like, it looks like it went up a lot. And it did, to $953 a month for my plan that I had been paying $834 a month the year before. And I got an analysis from the state again that showed, major average increases in all across all the individual plans for next year, 17% on top of 16.4% the year before, and another something like 15% the year before that. And, for me, it's a big headache and it's a bummer, but I'm one person. But the thing is here, there are about 20,000 Alaskans that insure themselves on this individual marketplace. So it's not most people in the health insurance market, but it's a significant chunk and we're all really feeling it right now.
Yeah. And what's driving these back-to-back increases?
Well, it's a good question. And I think it's like the question everyone wants an answer to, right? I think it's a little bit opaque, right? Like I don't get to see what Primera, which is my insurer, or Moda, the other insurer on the Alaska individual market, like what exactly is going into the numbers that they are crunching and putting out into an annual rate. But what we do know is that Primera has not actually been making money on these individual marketplace plans. They have said in filings to the federal government that they're actually losing money in this particular slice of the market. And what they told me when I talked to them, Primera, is that basically costs of care are rising, what they're being asked to pay providers. And then two, I think more significantly, people are continuing to need more healthcare and more services. They are getting sicker, and I think subtext to that is they're also getting older in Alaska. And so all those trends kind of put together, pharmaceutical drug prices presumably also going up, that stuff all is sort of what's driving the increase in cost of these plans.
After a recent op-ed you published, Senator Lisa Murkowski reached out to you. What did she want to talk about?
She basically said, yeah, this is a really big problem. And, looking at 3 years of 10 to 15 to 16% increases in the individual market and a total of 50% cost increase over 3 years, like, that's not good. And she basically was trying to say, look, I understand that this is not good and it's something I need to think about and work on. When I sort of asked her some of these same questions you're asking me, what's driving this? What can we do about it? I think, that's where I think her broad diagnosis about like increase in need for services, aging population, sicker population, that was sort of similar. But and she talked about, wanting to push more as far as like preventive care and getting people into the healthcare system before they're really kind of acutely sick. But, she didn't necessarily say like, she was actually pretty explicit about saying, I don't have a silver bullet here. I'm not, going to necessarily be able to just fix this problem out of hand.
Is there any sense that policymakers will be able to address the rising costs? Are there things like tax credits they can advocate for?
Well, certainly there is the issue of significant tax credits for the individual marketplace that are making the current situation better than it otherwise would be. Those enhanced tax credits, which were created by Congress during the COVID pandemic, those are set to expire at the end of this year. And it's not clear if Congress will be able to reauthorize those because of sort of partisan conflict. Senator Murkowski said she would be supportive of continuing them in isolation. I think beyond that, like I took the tack in this story, like the healthcare world is so complex and dysfunctional that like I don't feel qualified to offer real specific discrete recommendations about like what policymakers should do. I think that's like something that requires someone who's more informed and who has studied the issue. I don't feel like currently in Alaska we are having a robust discourse about how dysfunctional and expensive the system is. And, you know, it was my goal to kind of go somewhere between those two messages, which was to say and acknowledge, look, I'm not an expert, but the system sure isn't working for me. And I know it's not working for tens of thousands of other Alaskans.
Nat Herz is a reporter and publisher for Northern Journal.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from oversized equipment to small packages for commercial or residential. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. You can make a difference in the lives of Alaskans. Every year, hundreds of nonprofits provide warm meals, safe places, and resources to hundreds of thousands of Alaskans. By supporting Alaska's nonprofits when you apply for your PFD, you're giving more opportunity, more hope, more chances. This year, make more possible with the click of a button. Don't forget to give via PicClick Give when you apply for your PFD. This message sponsored by PicClick Give.
Two Alaskans earned national titles in the U.S. Cross Country Ski Championships at Kincaid Park in Anchorage over the weekend. It's the first time the city's hosted the national championships since 2018. University of Alaska Fairbanks senior Kendall Kramer won the women's 20K classic race, narrowly beating Erica Lavin of Sweden, who skis for the University of Utah. Kramer is on the U.S. ski team's development squad. After winning that race, she told Alaska-grown Olympic gold medalist and executive director of the Nordic Skiing Association of Anchorage, Keegan Randall, that the win was a surprise.
I definitely was not predicting this, and I was kind of counting myself out today. Once I realized going into the last lap that I could have my first national championship and not settle for second, even though that would have been good, then I just tried for it. And so that's awesome.
Anchorage's Luke Jaeger also earned a medal yesterday after finishing third over in the men's 20K race. He was outpaced by Andreas Kirking of Norway, who skis for the University of Denver, and John Steele Hagenbuck of Idaho, who races for Dartmouth. His teammate Michael Earnhardt of Eagle River finished sixth. Both Jaeger and Earnhardt are on the U.S. Cross Country B team. Competitors from other countries are ineligible for U.S. medals, bumping Steele Hagenbuck to gold and Jaeger to silver. Jaeger started the championship strong on Thursday, placing fourth in the 10K individual race. It was the fastest time by an Alaskan for the race by about 24 seconds. In the classic sprint on Saturday, Jaeger finished as the first American. The national championship is over, but skiers will be back at Kincaid tomorrow for a freestyle sprint race. And mere months after announcing the purchase of an icebreaker, the U.S. Coast Guard has taken delivery of the ship. KNOM's Ben Townsend has the story.
A 15-year-old vessel, formerly known as the Ivic, was handed over to the U.S. Coast Guard in late December. The service paid $125 million for the ship, including delivery, modifications, and spare parts. Oh, and a fresh new Coast Guard Red paint job, too. It'll join the Coast Guard's fleet of two operational icebreakers that traditionally split time between the northern and southern hemispheres. The ship will be homeported in Juneau and join the Healy in Arctic patrols. Once commissioned, the 360-foot vessel, that's 60 feet shorter than the Healy, will be renamed the Storis. It'll be the second Coast Guard ship to bear that name. The original was known as the Galloping Ghost of the Alaskan Coast and was the first U.S. vessel to circumnavigate the North American continent. The Storis is somewhat of a stopgap while the Coast Guard awaits the construction of up to five new heavy icebreakers through its Polar Security Program. The first ship of that class began construction in late December. The Coast Guard says they need eight or nine polar icebreakers to meet their operational needs in the Arctic, particularly as average annual sea ice extents reach record lows. The Storis is expected to enter operations in 2026 following a series of modifications and testing. Reporting in Nome, I'm Ben Townsend.
The bald eagle recently became the United States' official national bird. It's already a celebrated creature in Haines, which boasts the largest congregation of bald eagles in the world. KHNS reporter Melinda Munson spoke with visitors from across the country and the globe who traveled thousands of miles and braved frigid cold to photograph the birds.
John Reinhart is from Arizona, and this is his eighth trip to Haines. He says he came to shoot bald eagles, but quickly corrects himself.
Photograph the bald eagles.
Okay. To be clear, you're photographing the bald eagles.
Yes, don't want to get in legal trouble.
Reinhart originally came to Haines for just one trip, but things snowballed.
I was going to come up once in 2014, and something about this bird, I just fell in love with watching it and photographing it, and it does not get old.
It might come as a surprise that the bald eagle was not the national bird until President Joe Biden signed legislation this Christmas Eve. It all started with Preston Cook, a Minnesota eagle enthusiast. He realized in 2010 that the United States had an official flower, the rose, and an official mammal, the bison, but no official bird. So he made it his mission to change that. Minnesota is home to the second largest population of bald eagles. Alaska, of course, is first. And Haines, Alaska, has the most of anywhere. During October and November, about 3,000 to 4,000 bald eagles migrate to the Alaska Chilkat Bald Eagle Preserve to feed on a late run of salmon, and photographers from afar follow. Reinhart says he's not a professional photographer. His passion is a hobby.
What do you do with your pictures?
Enjoy them, share them with friends. Occasionally, I'll sell one.
The Alaska Chilkat Bald Eagle Preserve was created by the state in 1982 and covers 48,000 acres. While the highest concentration of eagles is present in the winter and fall, they can be spotted throughout the year. That seasonal increase happens because the Chilkat River doesn't freeze. Warm water from underground surfaces in an area called the Council Grounds. This allows for a late run of chum salmon that attracts brown bears, American dippers, mink, and a lot of eagles. But getting to Haines in the fall and winter can be complicated. Just ask Kevin Fry of Alabama. It took him two trips to make it to the eagle viewing. He says he had been reading about Haines for a long time and finally came up last December, but he only got as far as Juneau. Due to flight cancellations, he sat in the airport for 48 hours before giving up and heading home.
So now, 11 months later, I'm trying it again, and I made it this time.
Fry says it took 29 hours and four flights to get from Alabama to Haines. For Morten Romild, the journey was even longer, 3 days from Denmark. But he says he would do it again. Coming from a flat country, he was particularly impressed with the mountains.
It's a bucket list trip.
Visitors to the Eagle Preserve are asked to park in designated parking spaces, not to stop in the middle of the road, and to stay in marked viewing areas to avoid stressing the eagles. Haines also hosts the Alaska Bald Eagle Festival in November. Visitors can listen to guest lectures, participate in nature trivia at a local bar, or take an owl pellet class. In Chicagway, I'm Melinda Munson.
That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Ashlyn O'Hara in Kenai, Ava White in Anchorage, Sage Smiley in Bethel, Shelby Herbert in Fairbanks, Ben Townsend in Nome, and Melinda Munson in Skagway. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde. Tim Rocky is our producer. And I'm Wesley Early. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
Start your day with a quick look at the most important stories from around the state with Alaska Morning News, your dose of headlines each weekday morning on your local public radio station.
Join Alaska's only statewide live call-in forum to discuss the issues affecting your life. From politics to science and culture, that's Talk of Alaska, weekly on your local public radio station.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.
She says nothing of what she thinks. She just goes stumbling through her memories, staring out onto Gray Street. But she thinks, hey, how did I come to this? I've dreamed myself a thousand times around the world, but I can't get out of this place. There's an emptiness inside her, and she'd do anything to fill it in. But all the colors mixed together, it's gray, and it breaks her heart. She wishes it was different. She prays.
kiss to God most every night. And though she swears it doesn't listen, there's still a hope in her eyes. She says, I pray for all the dead fall on deaf ears. Am I supposed to take it on myself to get out of this place? Well, there's a loneliness inside her. Speaks outside a door, says take what you can from your dreams, make them as real as anything. Oh, it'd take the work out of the courage. But she says, please, there's a crazy man that's creeping outside my door. I live on the corner of Gray Street.
That's when you caught my eye. I chased you around in memories, through the breeze in the trees, and you teased me, but hey, the clock's turning around, and you're still playing these games. It's such a waste to bring me down, down, down. Don't bring me down, cause hey girl, I wanna catch your wave. Hey girl, I wanna drift away with you. Hey girl, you got it under tow. Hey girl, hey girl, don't wanna let you go. When I turned 16, that's when I started to dream. Surrounding memories, through the breeze in the trees, and you tease me, but hey, well every princess has a night, and I'm still in it for the fight. I'm not giving in, I'm gonna win, 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 I'm gonna win, cause hey girl, I wanna catch your wave. Hey girl, I wanna drift away with you. Hey girl, you've got it under tow. Hey girl, hey girl, don't wanna let you go. Never gonna let you go.
Before this crowd safe and good while I just stare. You spread the news around. I loved another one instead of you. I came around. Your eyes, your golden hair, I'm all alone.
I wonder if she could tell I'm hard right now.
I can't deny it, but I know